Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita and Shri Chaitanya Bhagavat. These are the two authorized biographies or life stories of Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the reason Srila Prabhupada chose to translate Chaitanya Charitamrita is because of its vast depth of philosophy. Chaitanya Bhagavat was also known as Chaitanya Mangal. And Vrindavan Das Thakur is the compiler of Chaitanya Bhagavat. And in many places, Chaitanya Bhagavat was an earlier work. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is careful. He says that such and such pastime is already being described by Vrindavan Das Thakur. So I am not going to go into much detail. Devotees relish both. It is not like one is superior or the other is inferior to it. But Srila Prabhupada had this task of explaining to the Kali Yuga population, especially 5,000 years after Kali Yuga has started, and a worldwide audience. It is remarkable that Srila Prabhupada finished the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita in just 18 months. Many years ago, when we were discussing Srila Prabhupada's books, now this is my feeling, speculation actually, that when you read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, you feel as if there is a formal audience, let's say, like a class, Bharati Vidya Bhavan Hall, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami is speaking on Bhagavad Gita. The purports are technical, the purports are structured, they heavily draw from Baldev Vidya Bhushan's explanations, and that's why the Gita is actually dedicated to Baldev Vidya Bhushan. Reading Bhagavatam purports, you get the feeling that Prabhupada is with his disciples and invitees. The language is more free. The language is, Prabhupada talks about world events, Prabhupada talks about recently this has happened, recently that has happened. When you read Chaitanya Charitamrita purports, you feel as if it's a very close group of dedicated followers, and sometimes Prabhupada's language is a bit more acidic. Anyone who doesn't do this is a dog, is a hog, is a demon. One who doesn't accept Lord Chaitanya is outright a demon. So sometimes we feel there are so many other bona fide Vaishnav paths. They don't know about Lord Chaitanya, so we have to be careful. One book which I had read, one of the first books that caught my fancy, is Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. It's not an easy read. It's quite dense. Many times it's inaccessible practically. But over the years, my affection has sort of been steady at a very low level. So I decided that enough is enough. This Gaur Purnima, I'm good. I'm going to do something about it. And what better place than to be in the association of Vaishnavas, seek their blessings. And so basically, this class today is my attempt to understand teaching of Lord Chaitanya. I beg at the lotus feet of all of you assembled here, please bless me that I get this knowledge. Mahaprabhu had 5 very important conversations. 2 of the conversation partners were brothers, Roop and Sanatan Goswami. One was the biggest Mayavadi scholar and sannyasi of that age. His Holiness Prakashananda Saraswati Maharaj. One was the Raj Purohit, the royal priest. And the last one was the governor of a province. So we can imagine, these are not just chats. They're not just some casual conversations. So I'll try to be brief. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his conversation with Rupa Goswami, says, the science of bhakti is like an ocean. And my dear Rupa, however hard I may try, I may succeed in giving you only one drop. Now, of that drop, which is nectar of devotion and teaching of Lord Chaitanya, I actually am giving only a drop. That's all I could muster. That's all I could manage. The spectrum of concepts is really very vast. Now, what is the reason for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to do what he did? What was the main reason? Number one, he is Yugavatar. He has this duty to teach. A Yugavatar's duty is to teach the population what is the dharma, what is the duty. And without a Yugavatar training you, or without a Yugavatar showing by his example, it's practically impossible. So with Rupa Goswami didn't ask any questions. On his own, Mahaprabhu started speaking. Sanatan Goswami was asking a lot of questions. Sarabhum Bhattacharya asked one question and then fell silent. Prakashananda Saraswati was very indignant. He was angry. And Ramananda Rai is saying, you are asking me questions and you are making me answer. Both are done by you. So we'll begin. Rupa and Sanatan are taken together. They were brothers. They left government service. Sanatan Goswami was in jail, but Rupa Goswami could escape that. So Rupa Goswami was made the first recipient of Mahaprabhu's mercy. And we have this verse, Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam. He knew the heart of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam. ಆದದನ ಸ್ತೃಣಂ ದಂತೈರ್ ಇದಂ ಯಾಚೆ ಪುನಃ ಪುನಃ ಶ್ರೀಮದ ರೂಪ ಪದಾಂ ಭೋಜೌ ಧುಲಿ ಸ್ಯಾಂ ಜನ್ಮನಿ ಜನ್ಮನಿ. ವಿ ಆಲ್ಸೋ ಪ್ರೇ ವಿತ್ ಸ್ಟ್ರಾ ಇನ್ ಮೈ ಟೇಕಿಂಗ್ ಸ್ಟ್ರಾಸ್ ಇನ್ ಮೈ ಟೀತ್ ಐ ಫಾಲ್ ಅಟ್ ಅ ಲೋಟಸ್ ಫೀಟ್ ಆಫ್ ರೂಪ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ. ಆದದನ ಸ್ತೃಣಂ ದಂತೈರ್ ಅಗೇನ್ ಅಗೇನ್ ಐ ವಿಶ್ ಟು ಬಿಕಮ್ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಅ ಪಾರ್ಟಿಕಲ್ ಆಫ್ ಡಸ್ಟ್ ಅಟ್ ದ ಲೋಟಸ್ ಫೀಟ್ ಆಫ್ ರೂಪ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ. Such is the importance of the personality of Rupa Goswami. And Srila Prabhupada also keeps the teachings of Rupa Goswami as one of the first teachings in teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Rupa Goswami, of course, in his characteristic humility, he writes a verse. ಹೃದಯಸ್ಯ ಪ್ರೇರಣಯಾ ಪ್ರವರ್ತಿತೋಹಂ ವರಾಕರೂಪೋಪಿ ತಸ್ಯ ಹರೇ ಪದಕಮಲಂ ವಂದೇ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ದೇವಸ್ಯ. ಹೃದಯಸ್ಯ ಪ್ರೇರಣಯಾ, ಹಿ ಗೇವ್ ಮೀ ದಿ ಇನ್ಸ್ಪಿರೇಷನ್ ವಿದ್ ಇನ್ ಮೈ ಹಾರ್ಟ್. ಪ್ರವರ್ತಿತೋ ಅಹಂ ಅಂಡ್ ರೂಪ ಇಸ್ ಹಿಸ್ ನೇಮ್, ದಟ್ಸ್ ಹಿಸ್ ಗಿವನ್ ನೇಮ್. His official name was Dabir Khas because he was under the service of this Nawab. He calls himself Varak Roop. The Sanskrit word Varak means a very low class person. So although I am low class, Varak Roop Api, still Mahaprabhu gave me that inspiration. So Mahaprabhu starts by saying, my dear Rupa, the living entity is just 1/10,000th tip of a hair. Many times we have this question, who am I? Who am I? And we see our cross body and we feel that this is me. Isn't that me? There was a school in Canada, Prabhupada went there, and he did it actually, it's on tape, I mean it's a recorded lecture. The students are coming, 8-year-old, 10-year-old, 11-year-olds. And then Prabhupada says, point out your hand, point out your leg, your face, your eyes, and then Prabhupada says, your clothes, your shoes. Now point out at yourself. No, I did everything. This is all me. He said, no, these are your hand, legs, eyes, nose, just like your shoes, belt, clothes, they all belong to you. We are very clear, the shoes and clothes, everything belong to me. But when we say, who are you, why do we point to our body? And Prabhupada says, look at this. Nobody knows who they are. It seems simplistic. Prabhupada said this, MIT, such a big college, and they don't know the science of the soul. In many other lectures, Prabhupada would say, because it is difficult, they put this question aside. Let's talk of technology, let's talk of data transfer, let's talk on entertainment, let's talk of going to the Mars, Moon, this and that. What about the science of the soul? They say, oh, there is no soul. Why? Because we can't see it. But Vedas say, yes. The Gita has words like, Dehi nosmin yatha dehe. Dehi. Deha, body. Then who's the Dehi? Asmin. Inside. Like there is a tenant who is inside the room. The tenant is not the room. There's a driver inside the car. The driver is not the car. Another verse in the Gita says, Sharirina. Sharir? Sharirina. There is somebody living inside the body. We can imagine the frustration of the acharyas when they come to the understanding that these people of Kali Yuga, they can't even go beyond his first unit test, what to speak of the final exam. Who are you? And they fail there. Well, let's keep that aside, then let's do something else. No. This jiva, the size of the soul, can just be surmised, can just be estimated. It can just be guessed. How difficult it is to guess, Mahaprabhu says, he is 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. That the tip of the hair, make 100 parts, take one part, make 100 more of that. That's the size. Our Srinathji Prabhu once said that he asked somebody, can this be seen even under electronic microscope? He got the answer, no. Now if something can't be seen, how do we understand it's there? So then Prabhupada, taking help from the Shastra, says, so many inferences, so many conclusions can be drawn that the body has no soul, it has no importance. There is a king's body, there is a CEO's body, there is a superstar, pop star, rock star, a sportsman's body, and the soul has left. Will the worm say that, oh, we'll not eat this because this body is very valuable? No. Whoever's body it is, the material body will have its own, follow its own laws. So ultimately, it is the soul in the body who is more important. Of course, this is a science and it requires training. So he says, of the 8.4 million species of life, apart from the human species, almost nobody else can understand what the soul is. There are eternally liberated living entities in the spiritual world, and those who are in this material world are called eternally conditioned, means you and me. Just yesterday I was hearing a class while doing our morning deity worship. Because you and me are eternally conditioned, Prabhupada makes a very interesting remark. He says, the path of bhakti yoga is to make the eternally conditioned eternally liberated. Just think about it. It's not like we are eternally condemned. We are eternally conditioned because when did our conditioning began, we don't know. Our situation could be like somebody who has fallen in a well and doesn't know how to swim, and it's a deep well. And people are saying, catch that stone, we'll throw a rope. He says, first of all, I would like to know how I fell. Who pushed me in? Otherwise I'm not going to come out. That is nonsense. You come out first, then you have all the time to understand how you fell in. So many times we have, especially in colleges and universities, first of all, why? How did I get inside? Are you sure you are inside? Do you know your condition? If the answer is yes, by all means try to get out. I used to think that myself, that perhaps the intelligence needed to understand how I got in is available only after you get out. Yeah, right now even the intelligence is not available. You require some sort of thing to start your thinking process. So among these various living entities, Mahaprabhu says that there are sthavar, situated in one place, and jangam, those who move. He says those who move are flying in air, swimming in water, or moving on land. Humans are, by the percentage-wise calculation, very less. I don't know now, but previously I had read that the rat population of India is 20 times the human population. And I think it could be true. That means we are about 125 crores, something like that. at least 20 times that many rats. And these rats are just one rodent species. There could be so many others. Just look at the ants in an ant hill. So basically the point is, there are many, 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 many times the number of humans, living entities who stay there, in this world. So, the civilized among the human beings are called Arya. Aryans, like the Germans in 1940s were saying, they are the Aryans. That's not exactly true. Every king would be referred to as Aryaputra. So Arya is a fairly known word in our scriptures, and Prabhupada makes it very clear. Those whose goal of life is to be spiritually advanced, they are Arya. It is not a race. It is not a, like Aryans came from some region. No, it's not like that. If you are not spiritually oriented, then you don't have a right to call yourself Arya. Then what happens? We saw all living entities, we saw Nitya Baddha, Nitya Siddha. Nitya Siddhas are not to be considered. Among Nitya Baddha, 8.4 million. Of that, humans very less. Of humans, Aryas are very less. Among those, most of them are karma asakt. Do your work and be attached to the fruit of it. It's natural in one sense, because the infection of the modes doesn't go away so easily. So karma sakta, those who are totally attached to getting the results of their activities, those who are a bit graduated from that particular platform, they are called jnanis. They are not interested in the fruits of their activities. In one sense it is good, they are considered advanced. But in one sense, and another sense, it's like you eat at some feast, heavy sweets, and then you have stomach ache, and you have headache, and migraine, and insomnia, it's a terrible thing. And the next day there is another feast. So, the moment somebody brings you to the buffet table, or somebody serves sweets, you know, you make such a face as if you're saying, oh, I'm not serving you poison or something. It is gulab jam, rasgulla. What memories you have is of indigestion and vomiting and headache. And you said, no! So jnanis are something like that. They're not exactly scholars. They're not exactly highly elevated people. But their past taste of karmic activities leave such a bad aftertaste. They say, no, don't. It's something like somebody finds a wallet, and then it's like, Bombay, here I come. And all night he's enjoying his senses. And then perhaps in a drunken state, he shouts at somebody, gets beaten up, lands in jail, and then comes out. 10 days later, he again finds a wallet. And he says, I am not going to fall in that trap now. He may call somebody, hey, you want this? Take it. So, just for the sake of understanding, we are making a bit graphic. But Vairagya in this age, in this material world, is actually based on that bitter aftertaste. So, karmis, total karma sakta. Jnanis, reformed karmis. Mahaprabhu is saying they are just people who just have had the end of the stick, and now they are not going to indulge anymore. But koti jnani madhe ek mukt, actual liberated, that means is like no ichha, no dvesh, I know everything and I don't want it. Very rare. Of such millions of muktas, Durlab ek Krishna Bhakt. So after reading that, I could understand the whole game plan is to make us understand how rare it is to become a Krishna devotee. While in India, people are just left, right, center saying, hum bhi bhakta hai, we are also devotees. So it's not actually so. It's actually very rare. Professing to be Krishna bhakta and actually having the science of devotion are two different things. So with Rupa Goswami's teachings, Mahaprabhu is making it very clear. Then Mahaprabhu explains, bhakti is exactly like a person getting a bij, a seed. Then he says, my dear Rupa, that seed has to be sown in the region of your heart. Your heart is your cultivating field. Shravana kirtana karaye sechana. Like what you are doing now, hearing and chanting. These are the processes by which we water the seed. And just like watering the seed, it takes time. There is this life insurance company's board here near the Jain temple. There is a small plant and they say, how nice to just water it only once. That means they are saying, just pay your premium only once and throughout the year, throughout the life you don't have to pay anything. And one day this is going to be a big tree, which will give yield fruits in the time of, in the form of, you know, payment or whatever. Of course, life insurance means in order to get money, you have to die. You don't get it, your family gets it. But how come this world seduces us? That's the only word I can think of. That just water it once and things will grow. Have you ever seen anything grow like that? So this first thing, like you chant only once and you get liberated, isn't it? It says, chant only once. It says chant only once to make you understand the efficacy of the process. That doesn't mean you actually chant only once and say, oh, it's okay. So regular Shravan Kirtan is necessary, just like regular watering is necessary for the seed to grow into a sapling. Then Mahaprabhu says the creeper grows. This creeper can actually grow faster than the universe. Crack the shell of the universe, go through the viraja, through the Brahman effulgence, seek Krishna's planet, find Krishna's lotus feet, take shelter there, and once it connects there, fruits start growing on that creeper. And these fruits are the fruit of love of God. And he says, once the devotee tastes that, nothing more is needed. The creeper keeps on giving fruits, and then that's how we always say spiritual happiness always increasing. Why? Because this creeper keeps on producing fruits. But you may say, I knew there was one but somewhere. This path is not, that fast. That yesterday you planted and today you are suddenly feeling, looking in the mirror, you know. Like one devotee was saying, Prabhupada didn't insist putting tilak before, and then tilak was introduced. So this Prabhupada disciple said, I looked in the bathroom mirror, my perfect tilak, and I said, Vaishnav. So happy to see your... one thing that happened with me that, all of us, our skins have certain criteria, I can just put it like that. And one brahmachari next locker to me, like next door, the next locker. So I had cleaned my forehead and still two lines were visible. So he said, how fortunate, man. You're like a born Vaishnav. And at least for 2 days I was floating. I was not walking on the land. I was thinking, maybe this body actually is Vaishnava or something. Now I realize it doesn't happen like that. Even if you have a birthmark which looks like a tilak, you still have to get up every day and chant your rounds and follow the regulative principles. And so It's like you try to fall for the easy path. But the point is, water, like Shravan Kirtan, that water is case neutral, as they say. Along with that nourishment given to the sapling, weeds also start growing. Mahaprabhu is making very clear. And we all, especially those who are chanting for the last 5 years, 8 years, 10 years, 25, 35 years, like that, we know. We give up our attachment for any kind of profit, fame, adoration in the material world. Some people have been club secretaries of their Rummy club or whatever, picnicking club, trekking club, or general secretaries or whatever. But then in the small association of devotees, Sangha, that desire for profit again comes. That desire for fame comes. That desire for adoration comes. Why is that? It's a perverted reflection of our desire for acceptance. We feel, we are told that whatever you do, Krishna notices. You say, fine, but I want these people also to notice what I am doing. And that is where we are told that don't worry. You don't need to worry whether somebody notices your service or not. Krishna does. But when we insist, no, even the body of devotees need to know how great I am. It is a simultaneous expression of lack of faith in Krishna. So Mahaprabhu says this profit, fame, adoration thing is a dangerous thing. Mahaprabhu's warning is the weeds grow faster than the bhakti lata beach. That's a fact of life. I'm not a farmer myself, but I've seen many times what you want to grow is like 1.5 feet, and what the weeds around it are like 4 or 5. They grow very fast. So we may say, I'll chant more and I'll expect Krishna to take those weeds away. Mahaprabhu, no, that's your job. You have to personally uproot those weeds. And that's where the hard thing comes. Oh, this is my job. I am a temple president here. I translate Srimad Bhagavatam. Take out those weeds. Oh, so difficult. In the Bhagavad Gita, I read a statement. You may say, false ego, false ego. Everybody talks of false ego. Where is it? The attachment for taking credit for doing anything is a sure sign that the false ego is alive and well and kicking. Not just alive and well. Anytime you feel that, I needed to be given that credit. I mean, it's my due. That's the false ego in action. Mahaprabhu sums it up. As I said, I will not be going into so much detail. I don't have the intelligence also, and then Mahaprabhu has told so many things. The stages of bhakti, Mahaprabhu says, are only 3. There is a beginning stage, where everything is sort of new. Giriraj Maharaj once said that when he walked in the Boston temple after being introduced to the process and ISKCON and Prabhupada, he was convinced everybody there is a pure devotee. This is after some time, then I don't think like that. So, what was the problem? Everybody downgraded from their service? No. It's because we may start analyzing others, and as we go closer to people, more often than not, the other side of their personality, that we accept as their real side. That's a fact of life. So that needs to be reworked, recharged again and again. The second stage is the realization of service, where you actually understand that service is my shelter, service is the opportunity. service is my identity. And only after that, third is the love of God. Many times Maharaj, Adhanath Swami Maharaj has explained that love of God is not something which we demand. It is bestowed, it is given. The enthusiasm for doing bhakti is something we can demand. The right to serve is something we can demand. But the fruit of that is not within our powers. In the end, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches the science of the five rasas. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj once gave an example and really stayed stuck in my heart. It so apt, so precise. He said there is a family where the husband is sick and he is on a bed. So his wife serves him, his friend comes to him and they chat for a while. The servant brings the meals or massages his feet. His mother is there to look after his needs, to cook for him sometimes. So he said, this imagine in your mind's eye a sick man on a bed and all these people around him, and the rasas will be clear in your mind also. The bed is serving him in shantaras. It's a real comfortable bed. He can get up to read, he can do anything. Those beds are there, you know, electrically or manually operated. But if he tells the bed, thank you, you are really serving me nicely, there is no reciprocation. The servant who massages his feet is serving him in dasyaras. The servant gets paid for it, so there is a formal kind of gap. That is dasyaras. Higher than that is a friend. The friend also may massage. The friend also may do something, but there is more intimacy. That is sakhyaras. And when his mother comes and serves him, or father comes and serves him, that's vatsalya bhav, parenthood. And when the wife comes, it is considered the most intimate. It's natural. That is called madhurya bhav. So, love of God, in most places, it is just fear of God. People say, Bhagwan se daro. Or he's a God-fearing person. That's considered like a big achievement. Oh, he is a very God-fearing person. Fine, there is nothing wrong with that. But, just see what Mahaprabhu is giving. Fear of God, the Bible says, is the beginning of wisdom. But love of God is the end of wisdom. It is the peak, is the ultimate achievement. So Rupa Goswami was blessed by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You go and preach this. And as Gauranga Prabhu clarified very nicely, Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu is a product of about 17 years. Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipunau. They consulted so many Shastras. In fact, Rupa Goswami, when he talks about, that's there in the Padma Puran, it's just like, you know, how people discussing Hollywood or Bollywood, they say 1954 was that hit, then 67 was that hit. Or people who like cricket, or the 2011 World Cup or 2000, whatever. Because it is so familiar. So for these Goswamis, all these Shastras, they are so familiar. Yatha Padme means from Padma Puran. Padmottar Khande, Yatha Narasimhe from Narasimha Puran. Only after 500 years we feel, what was that? Which Puran? So it means that even some of the normal people, in fact he wrote in Sanskrit, so Sanskrit also was quite well known. Now we can gauge how things have come down. We move on to the next teaching, that is teaching to Sanatan Goswami. Sanatan Goswami is like a thriller thing. He was in jail and his boss, the king, Nawab, he is saying, I go to plunder other kingdoms, knowing fully well that this kingdom is safe under you. And now you are saying you are sick. I asked the court minister to find out what kind of sickness. So he went to your home and they told that sickness? There was big katha going on and big singing, dancing, festivals. What are you up to? Sanatana Goswami is saying, I'm just in no mood to continue what I'm doing. He said, no, that's not negotiable. So he says, well, I serve under you, you are the king. My culture teaches me that I should respect you. So he's actually put on in house arrest. Then Sanatana Goswami tells the housekeeper, the jail superintendent, that just tell your king that I went to pass stool on the banks of the river and I drowned. He said, I can't do that. So he gives him few thousand coins. I can't do that. He gives him more. Says, maybe I'll try. So there is a price for everything. And Rupa Goswami had arranged that much gold. So he flees away. He has one servant with him. He has 8 gold coins. And they are in a small inn, a small dharmashala type. And the landlord there, he has an astrologer. Just imagine the science of astrology at that time. He knew exactly how many coins this new person has. So he says, he's carrying 8 coins. He says, let us kill them this night. The landlord, the way he was behaving with Sanatana Goswami, so loving, ati bhakti chore lakshan. Prabhupada says, there's a Bengali proverb. Anytime you feel somebody is extra servile and extra loving, you know there is something amiss. So Sanatana Goswami says, look, my servant may have something. What do you have? So he says, I have 7 coins. Give it to him. For a split second, the landlord has a change of heart. He said, I do these kind of things, but seems like you are a Mahatma. I can't afford. No. I can't do that. You keep those coins. Sanatana Goswami says, if not you today, somebody else might do it tomorrow. He says, give. So he gives the coins. He says, at least today, tonight you are my guest. Gives them nice blanket and nice food and everything. Next day morning, Sanatana Goswami's servant Ishan says, actually, I have 1 coin left. The landlord was saying, my astrologer was saying 8, but he's saying 7. Chalo, theek hai, 7 to 7, no problem. And then when Ishan says, look how smart I am. I have kept 1 for our emergencies. He says, keep this and go away. He says, what happened? He says, just go away. He crosses a very hilly, forested area. Comes to the place where his brother-in-law is a government servant. The brother-in-law sees him, Shrikant, and he says, my God, what happened? Come here, stay properly, eat nicely. He says, I can't stay here for 2 monuments now. I'm leaving. So he at least guides him how to go. He reaches Varanasi. In the house of Chandrasekhar Acharya, Mahaprabhu inside is telling his disciple, his devotee, there is a Mahatma outside, a pure devotee outside. Fetch him. So he comes out, sees a Muslim Darvesh. Many were there during those times. When today we have Fakirs or Darvesh. So he comes back and says, nope, no Vaishnava outside. He says, go. There is a pure devotee of Krishna standing outside. He says, no, there is nobody. He says, is there anyone standing? He says, yeah, someone looking like a Darvesh is standing there. Fetch him. And he is surprised to see Mahaprabhu embracing Sanatana Goswami. He says, this is the fruit of my eyes, akshno phalam. The result of high piety for my eyes to see a devotee like you. Sanatana Goswami is saying, please don't embrace me, please don't ease. He says, Krishna has delivered you from Rau Rau or Maha Rau Rau. It's like a big hellish situation. At the same time, Sanatana Goswami's clothes are hair disheveled, clothes are ragged and torn. But he has a nice blanket on his shoulders. That's the only thing his brother-in-law gave him. Time and again Mahaprabhu would look at the blanket and he knew. So he goes to a to the river Ganga, finds that a sadhu is cleaning his quilt, some blanket type thing. He says, "Can you take this and give me that?" He says, "Ah, you are in the mood for fun, right?" He says, no, I'm serious." So he comes back. Mahaprabhu asks him, "What about that blanket?" He says, "Oh, I got rid of it." He said, "Ah, now you are rid of the last snares of attachment." Now, Sanatana Goswami, for his part, begins by inquiring what Mahaprabhu says you and me should be doing. Sanatana Goswami is just the instrument. Who am I? Number one question. Who am I? Why am I troubled by these threefold miseries in this world? Why? Most of the... Like, have you heard this accusation that, oh, devotional life is a compromise. No movies, no films, no fun, no drinks, no this, no that. Why such a compromise? In fact, it's the other way around. Having a life of suffering threefold miseries day in, day out is a life of compromise. Just because somebody is traveling in a jet doesn't mean he has no stress, no tension, no blood pressure. Recently this thing came up. We are tackling this in the Back to Quality magazine. Happiest people on earth. I don't know if you have noticed that. And some Scandinavian countries, Denmark especially, is now the officially happiest place on earth. So one person, he's not a economist, he's not a scientist or whatever. He says, "I've been to these two, three happiest nations on earth, Switzerland, Denmark. Why do people look so glum?" I mean, you don't see happy people on the streets. If you ask somebody what's the time in the metro, they're like, "You ask me what the time is? Why?" It's like, I don't talk to strangers. And they're saying, but in India's villages, you find a mother playing with her kid, a father playing with his kid, there might be no 4G connection, no plasma TV, and no running hot water, but they smile all the time. So basically, something is wrong with the way they judge how people are happy. We will see that later. Read the BTG if you want to understand what conclusions we are coming to. But Sanatana Goswami's query, which is the beginning of Sanatana Shiksha, Prabhupada comments, his questions, they start where the Bhagavad Gita stops. How is that? The Bhagavad Gita has Arjun, Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Raja. Leave everything and just surrender unto me. Sanatana Goswami has already surrendered. And he is asking, what are my duties? Think for a moment. He is asking, what are the duties of a liberated soul? All of India is under the impression, after liberation there is no work. What do you mean? Om Shanti, you are like, peace, 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 peace. This is where Mahaprabhu has that cutting edge. I'm just taking you on a different angle. We have activities, material activities or conditioned activities. These activities, they cause us bondage. Like for example, a patient having diarrhea, dysentery, vomiting, aren't those activities? Yeah, I mean, it's a bit embarrassing, but the nurse comes and says, "How many times?" "It's only 7. Yesterday was 19. "Oh, very good. And vomiting, only 4. Yesterday was 7. So, all these are activities. But they are all miserable activities. The nurse or the doctor may find happiness in saying that, "Oh, now it's coming down. But when does the pleasurable activities begin? After discharge from the hospital. And then you may see your itinerary and say, Okay, so one party on Thursday night, one party on Friday night, and then Sunday we have another picnic. That's pleasurable activity. So Sanatana Goswami is asking, what do I do now, now that I am liberated? It doesn't seem like, you know, we are liberated. In one sense we are. All of us are. How? We have begun our activities in devotional service. That means you are liberated. In a notional way at least. It's not suddenly you get a halo around your neck or you put that in your Facebook. Look at me, my devotional picture. Like, I had seen devotees, they see some other devotees' pictures, they look how transcendental he looks. I was always worried. I mean, how come you look transcendental? If you are thinking about serving Vaishnavas and Krishna, suddenly that thought process is transcendental. If the food is offered to Krishna, it is transcendental. If a place is considered devoted to only thoughts of Krishna, it is transcendental. So transcendence is something locally available. It's like a Wi-Fi connectivity. You just connect to Krishna and you are transcendental. Detached from Krishna, then and there itself, you are in the other place. Once Giriraj Maharaj told Prabhupada, oh, really? So that time, actually I must be in Maya. Prabhupada said, actually you are always in Maya. And sometimes you are in Krishna. So it's part of the growing process. So Sanatana Goswami's inquiry is where the Gita ends. And comes this, pat comes this answer. Jivera Swarupa Hoi Krishnera Nitya Das Jiv Tatastha Shakti Bheda Bheda Prakash. Two lines. But speaks volumes. Jivera Swarup. You could be anybody. Tinker, tailor, soldier, sailor, or worm, or this or that. Your real swaroop, your actual constitutional position is Krishnera Nitya Das. Now that's a problem if somebody could see it from that angle. First of all, you don't like Krishna because you have so many accusations. Oh, he did this, he did that. Why Krishna? Why not somebody else? But the scriptures say, no, Krishna. And then you say, Das? I mean, if he is helping me for getting my happiness, or he is a partner, he is a cooperator, he lends me something, that's okay. I am his servant. Well, the whole thing is not finished yet. You are his eternal servant. Now that's enough to explode somebody's mind completely. Right, somebody, Prabhupada says, and then comes the clincher. You are the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, 100 times removed servant. Enough for someone never to look in the direction of Bhagavad Gita again. Well, are we just sentimentalists? Do we come here just because we like Krishna? Is this Krishna's party? Aam Bhakta's party? Something like that. We choose one leader and we say, okay, hell or high water, we are for him. Prabhupada clarifies very nicely. Oh, Mr. Ishwaroham Aham Bhogi, you don't want to serve Krishna. Correct. So what are you doing here? Well, I'm having my life, my career, I'm enjoying. No. Here you are serving Maya. You may say, come on, I hardly know what Maya is. Suddenly you come in my life and bring me some nomenclature, some terminology, you are serving Maya. Why were you angry yesterday? Someone stepped on my toes. It was on the church gate fast and he stepped on my toes. So I said, hey, tumhara dash dash ka ghar hai, gaadi nahi hai. Behave properly. But why were you angry? You could have sorted out the matter. The Shastra says, you were a slave to anger. you were a servant of anger for that particular time. You may say, me serving anger? No. You were a servant of greed when you saw that lottery ticket saying 5 rupees mein 50 lakh. You are a servant of lust, servant of anger, servant of envy. So the normal janta, normal populace, they feel, I am angry and anger is serving me. But once when we understand the real truth, that if I get angry, why can't I get angry at a certain point and then just, isn't there a thermostat inside that after some time, it goes off? No. Big leaders, they have fallen prey to anger or lust or envy or madness or illusion. So then we come to this understanding, I may not be convinced of Krishna, but I am convinced of Maya, that she is what she is not. Like sometimes you have these internet discussions and they really are very philosophical. I hope I get the whole thing correct. People today are engaged in jobs they don't like, salaries which they don't like, with the money they are trying to impress friends they don't like, by purchasing commodities which they don't like. The shop till you drop, or whatever, this or that. Whom are you going to impress? Like they are saying, I'm so stressed, I'm just going to shop something, anything. Now, is that a way of becoming happy? By just blowing away your allowance or blowing away your salary? So, being convinced of the nature of this material energy makes you understand, hey, she is not serving me. I am serving her. So actually, even philosophically, rationally, logically, the choice boils down to only two things. Either serve Krishna or serve Maya. Like a prisoner cannot say, I am doing a diploma in correctional institution management. No, you are in a prison. You can't go out. No, I studied this place, I studied that place, I like various cuisines. So I thought, you know, this Arthur Road jail, they also serve something nice. So I'm just 3 months, I'm just spending here. No. You may say, I like the place. That you may say. What is freedom? Freedom means right now if somebody says, I don't like this guy speaking, and he can walk out. That is freedom. So there is no freedom. And therefore, we are serving Maya. So then, like there are many who would not like to serve Maya, but not like Krishna also that much. I catch myself in that position. Maya, sure, I don't like her. But Krishna, so that is that intermediate stage where you need to give your intelligence that booster, that nourishment. And that's what Sanatana Goswami is given. Mahaprabhu saying, Jiva is a particle of sunshine. Krishna is like the sun. How many times we have this question? Does Krishna ever come into Maya? Does Krishna ever feel like, oh, I lost. Or we may chant for lifetimes and we may tell Krishna, it's time to give me bhakti. Oh, I forgot your serial code. I checked records. There is no mention of you taking diksha any time or whatever. I did! You can see in some newsletters somewhere my name's there. No. Krishna has Maya as his energy in such a way. Vyasdev got that darshan and Shukdev Goswami explains in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vilajya Manaya. Maya is thoroughly ashamed to come in front of Krishna. Look how she deals with us, and she is even embarrassed to come in front of Krishna. She is like his shadow. After some time, we also come to understand, hey, she's not a bad personality after all. I chose to be under her. She didn't ask me that, you know, like if in today's parlance, today's life, if the jail is empty, the warden cannot make a request to the government, send somebody, otherwise I might lose my job. No, just because the jail is empty, like there are some colleges which are having courses but no students, they might have a promotional campaign. Let more students come for botany or zoology or this or that. But certainly a prison cannot have the luxury of saying 6 months and nobody's here and what are you doing? No. Just see how absurd it is. You laugh at this thought. So, Maya being filled, Maya's realm being filled with people, she has no fear that, you know, what will happen if this whole thing is empty. She is just a shadow potency of Krishna. As to Sanatana Goswami asking, why happiness and distress and heaven and hell, why it hits me with such force? Wonderful example Mahaprabhu gives. He says, aisa kuch nahi hai. It's not like that. He says, really? He says, look, olden days, they would take a big bamboo, long bamboo, and the prisoner would be tied like this, like a T. This hand tied to the bamboo going from behind, this hand tied here. And there are ropes. And then the king's minister, he gives a signal. So he slowly lowered, the prisoner is lowered in a lake or a body of water. So he goes down. And after 20 seconds, imagine if you don't have practice for half a minute or whatever. And then when you are pulled outside, bliss. I can breathe. What happiness. Since getting up in the morning, how many times have you taken a breath? You say, I don't count that. But taking a breath, was it happy? He said, no, it was like normal. What's the happiness in that? Ask that person who was dunked in the river and now that he's brought up, he feels such happiness, I can breathe. Mahaprabhu says, his heaven, hell is like that. Sometimes you are lowered, that means you are miserable. For a brief respite, for a brief recess, you are brought up and you feel, ha, I made it. Green card. Visa, H1B, or a flat here, 3BHK, Mada lottery, or all the kinds of things. You know, anything happens and you feel, main to saap ban gaya. I have become big. Now this, main to ye ban gaya or whatever, continues up to Indralok. It's not just a particular locality of Mumbai city or your neighbor or everybody is under the same impression. Like we greet each other. How are you? Fine, no problem. I didn't ask for problems. I just asked, how are you? Why you mention problems? But doesn't everybody we feel? See, problems, like you are going evening time, twilight, the shadows become longer. So, when you see the back of one problem, you say, good riddance, that problem is over. And then as you are walking, you see the head, just the shadow, like a man, there's a light from behind and the tall shadow on the street. So round the corner, you see the shadow coming of the next problem. And you know that after some time, the shadow will come longer, longer and identify the same person. Obi piche gaya. You go after that. I mean, you go beyond that. There is another one. Seems like it's a whole video game that one gone, the next coming up. You see in these video games how these villains keep on coming again and again. They are programmed. It's not like it is a problem with your particular game. You may run out of bullets, but the program will not run out of villains or monsters or whatever shape form they come. So, Mahaprabhu is telling Sanatana Goswami, Don't try to be happy between two problems. Happiness has to be unending. And that's why everybody in this world says, unending, pure happiness doesn't exist. Don't try to find out. Don't be foolish. Be like the rest of us. Compromise. Why you have to be different? You say, what do you mean? This human form of life is meant to be different. Some of the many famous stories which we come across are there in these conversations. Mahaprabhu tells a story of a man going to an astrologer called Sarvagya, know-it-all, Mr. Know-it-all. And Sarvagya tells this person, you are trying to find a treasure and you are having difficulty finding it. Don't try to go to the southern side of your courtyard. The treasure is right there in your courtyard. Don't go to the southern side. There is a wasp, there is an insect which will sting you. Don't go to the western side. There is a yaksha who might kill you. Don't go to the northern side. There is a python which may gobble you. Now it is not just figurative terms, there is a deeper meaning behind it. Southern side is rituals. In rituals, you always feel like I just am being told about a particular mantra. It has to be chanted only at this particular time. Then you have to look in a particular direction and you can't even get up for drinking water or passing water or no conversation. Conversation means gone. And for the first time I am realizing this Mahamantra is much better. No hard and fast rules. Tatrarbita niyamita smare na kala. And of course, these other mantras are not bad or something. But just like a particular goddess, if you have to have the red flowers, wear a yellow sari, and not eat this and not eat that and only eat this. Why? So these rituals are like that wasps. You get that sting. On the western side is a yaksha. Yakshas are known for guarding treasures. But for those who come for treasure hunting, they kill them. Northern side is yoga, becoming one. This becoming one is a very popular concept in India. I remember when we were giving our Marathi text for translation, the text says, in this way, one can gain shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. Even it is so clear, gaining shelter at the lotus feet. And that lady is saying, so he becomes one, right? I said, where is this one? Of course, Prabhupada said, why only one? We can become greater. Yashoda Mai trying to bind Krishna, the devotees, Harir Bhakta Vashyata. Hari is Bhakta Vashya. He gladly comes in the control of his pure devotees. So there is no fun in just being one. You can actually become more, provided there is pure love. And then of course, some of the most technical things are mentioned by Mahaprabhu. How great Krishna is. The various forms of Krishna. The six kinds of incarnations. Like mostly people feel, Kali Das hai na, 10 incarnations, Dashavatar, Purushavatar, Leelavatar, Yugavatar, Gunavatar, Manvantaravatar, Shaktaveshavatar. Six broad categories. I won't go in detail, but I'll just mention all of them. Purushavatars are the three Vishnus. Karanodakshai, Garbhodakshai, Shirodakshai. A simple way to understand, Karan Udak, the causal ocean, from whose body pours these universes come. He gives the breath away, Ushvas, the universes come. He takes a breath, they go inside his body. So all our problems are within his two breaths, that's all. In fact, once for a certain management issue, Radhan Maharaj said, this problem will end when Mahavishnu will take his breath inside. It's a fact. Some issues are like that. So he has expelled his breath and the universes have come. That universe comes ready-made, half filled with water. That is a Garbhodak ocean. There is a Vishnu there. From his navel comes Brahma. And then Brahma makes the Srishti, makes this cosmic manifestation. And in each and every living being, and in each and every atom, andantarastha paramano chayantarastham, within every atom and between two atoms, Krishna expands as the super soul. That is the third Vishnu. That is Purushavatar. Gunavatar. Every universe needs creation. Creation is in the mode of passion. So Brahmaji takes that job. Shivaji, Lord Shankara, destroys. Destruction is the mode of ignorance. And Vishnu is needed for mode of maintenance. Sattva Guna. That is a Gunavatar. The 10 incarnations which Indians are so fond of, that only 10, 10, 10, they always talk, they are just the Leela avatars. For a particular pastime, Krishna takes a form. Eternally, by the way. It is not like, while Hiranyakashipu was threatening Prahlad, the Lord was putting on makeup of being a lion there. He is eternal. And he didn't wait inside a pillar, as we have to do in our dramas. He was there. He didn't come out because Hiranyakashipu threatened him. No. He didn't come out because Hiranyakashipu kicked on that pillar or blasted with his sword. He came because this 5-year-old boy is saying, he's telling his father, why not? He's telling, what is the source of your strength? If he had said, you know, I did a particular secret puja, or I chant a different mantra, or I'm more powerful than you. He gave the answer, honest answer, but that was the last straw which broke the camel's back. And what is that? The same as yours. My strength is no foreign strength, or your strength is not something else. And that sort angered Hiranyakashipu the most. No! My strength is my own. I did tapasya. Actually, when you say, I did tapasya, I did his ritual, I did his chanting, Prabhupada says, didn't you beg something from somebody? This is my guru is like a big shot in the Himalayas. He is wrapped in meditation. Meditation means serving somebody. You are thinking of somebody in a worshipable way. That is, you are serving somebody. So every deity, every temple in India, you find people either giving benedictions or doing something. Only Krishna is playing his flute. He seems like in his own world. That's what an enjoyer means, by the way. So Leela avatar, Manvantara avatar, every Manu has a time period. During that, any incarnation is called Manvantara avatar. So Yuga avatar, yeah, the next category is every Yuga Krishna comes, inaugurates the Yuga Dharma, goes back. And Shaktyavesh is when Krishna invests his potency into someone. Lastly, Sanatan Goswami asked about the Atmaram verse, and this time Mahaprabhu completely flipped out. He started explaining. He gave 61 meanings of this verse and finally told, look, I think I have gone mad. But did you understand? He said, yeah. So he said, you also gone mad, it seems. These are the things which we can relate to easily. I said, okay, mad. But I understood that Srimad Bhagavatam is a text which makes you mad in a elevated kind of way. There are enough madmen in our society. Somebody lost his money, he got mad. Somebody lost his love life, he got mad. Somebody lost his fame, he got mad. Or somebody got bored and he got mad. Yeah, schizophrenia is like a common disease now. Madness is a common disease. People collect stamps, or people collect rocks, or people climb rocks, or people swim underwater. So many kinds of things they go under the name of hobbies and interest. Actually, it's madness. I used to collect stamps. That was philately, not madness, by the way. No, it's madness. So one stamp got printed upside down. That means the price and the queen's picture was upside down. 12,000 pounds was the offered price. If anybody has it, it's 12,000 pounds. Why? It was a mistake. It's a crazy word. 1879, a mistake. 1979, it cost 12,000 pounds to purchase that mistake. So what it is, except madness. Like one antique shop had this heading, this banner there. Buy everything at 10 times the price what your grandmother threw out of the house. Your grandmother threw it out 30 years ago. Now you're going to buy the same thing at 10 times the price. That's what antiques mean, by the way. So, here is this madness means extreme attachment for Krishna, and that's what made Mahaprabhu speak those 61 meanings. We come now to the great Mayavad philosopher, Prakashanand Saraswati Maharaj, His Holiness. He had thousands and thousands of disciples. He was in Banaras, the domain of Mayavad. News came that a sannyasi has come. Beautiful looking, handsome guy. But he doesn't speak Vedanta. He doesn't do the normal, what sannyasi is supposed to do. Instead, this person is actually, you know, he looks like a romantic person. He's like singing and dancing. So they start criticizing. One Maharashtrian Brahmin, at whose home Mahaprabhu would take prasad, he said, once, please, once would you agree to meet them? Mahaprabhu agrees. The discussion is quite deep. It's about Vedanta Sutra, the nature of the jiva. I'm not going to go in much detail, but the background is more important, and especially about the way Mahaprabhu brought out the meaning of the Maha Mantra. And surprisingly, in the teaching of Lord Chaitanya, one paragraph and Prabhupada quotes the Maha Mantra twice. It's like Prakashanas was asking, why do you chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare? And Mahaprabhu answered, I chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, because it is the Maha Mantra and it is the only means of deliverance. So seems like Prabhupada wants the reader to chant as many times as possible. So here is the setting. Mahaprabhu never goes for any invitations, but this time he agrees. It's a big hall. Prakashanand Saraswati is seated on a big asana. And there is a place. It's not like an organized, like a Carnegie Mellon Hall or some Royal Albert Hall, but it's a big place. And there is a place where they wash their feet. So it's all muddy there. Mahaprabhu comes. And then he just sits there. Immediately, Prakashananda Saraswati Pad, he comes down and says, hey, oh, Shripad, Shripad, please, please, I mean, not so humble. Why are you sitting here? And Mahaprabhu meekly says, my sannyas is, you know, not that of a very good order. My sannyas is from a very inferior type. Like if you are told, you know, you are an engineer. Yeah. Which college? Dada Sahib Dabade College of... you don't... Chalisgaon. No. Where is that? No, the college closed last year because there was some accountancy problem. The accounts are not... So you are an engineer. You have that. But then... We had a brahmachari in our temple, Hindi PhD, but the university which gave him PhD got defunct. So people used to make fun of him, you know, he is a PhD but there is no university backing him up. So Mahaprabhu's stance is, my sannyas name, my guru's name is Bharati. So Prabhupada clarifies, among the Shankaracharya sannyasis, Aranya, Sagara, Ashram. The names given to sannyasis also, like Puri means a city, Ashrama means an ashram, Aranya means in the forest, Giri means a mountain peak, Sagar means on the ocean. So these are the names given. And then slowly out of just how time passed by, some of the names became very, very well known. Now this first instance of sannyasi's humility, and Prakashan Suti catches him by hand and says, no, please don't do like that. Sit next to me here. Now it says that this gesture alone got him tons of piety. And then he says, the first question is, why do you chant? That too in public. I don't know about any of you, but I had a deep reservation against chanting. I shouldn't be saying that. This is the day of chanting and dancing. But my earliest recollection is when there was a wedding ceremony, not in Mumbai, I had gone somewhere, and somebody said, you should dance today because it's marriage. I said, hey, what's the problem? So throughout the procession, all of my cousins and distant relatives and some friends, they were all having this dancing in the streets, and I said, no, I can't do that. Finally, one convinced me. I said, okay, the band stopped, and now I'll dance. We had reached the end of the thing, so there was no more band after that. So I said, okay, singing, dancing is not for me. 6 months I used to come to our Radha Gopinath temple. I used to sit in the lineage office. I used to read back to God, I'd read other books. And then after 12:30 I used to hear, dhar 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 dhar. And one day I asked Radha Girdhari Prabhu, what happens up there? So he was like waiting for me to ask, to answer this question. He was waiting to answer this question. He said, would you mind coming up? So I said, next Sunday. So I said, okay. The next Sunday I came here. Our Rohinandan Prabhu was leading the 12:30 Aarti. And Krishna Chandra Prabhu was dancing. I was so embarrassed. I was saying, these are grown-ups and they are jumping like this. And really, now I know it is anartha, but there was this prejudice against singing or dancing. Not singing, but dancing at least. I swear, I will not lie before Radha Gopinath. After understanding that chanting and dancing is the part of Hare Krishna life, to raise my hands, it took me 6 months. I took a vow. The next Sunday I come, I'm going to raise my arms. So, we all come with our conditionings. I see some devotees who, for them, chanting and dancing is as natural. Our Jai Sajjanan Prabhu, for him, his age, if you tell somebody's age, they'll say, you're lying. It doesn't look like he's 52, it looks the opposite, 25. So seeing devotees, that expression, and of course, seeing Radhanand Maharaj dance during those years, and then other devotees, Govind Prabhu dancing. So then you realize, hey, this is not bhavukta. Bhavukta, pure sentimental mush, as they call it nowadays, has nothing to do with philosophy. So, rather than going into the detail of the conversation, this is the essence of it. I relish it a lot. I hope you will relish. Mahaprabhu is asked, why sannyasi means grim, serious, Vedanta discussion, you know, what could be Atma? And then you have to have various ways of tackling this question. This is how Mahaprabhu explained. Prabhu kahe shuna shripad ihara karan guru more murkh dekhe karila shasan. He said, I know I should be discussing Vedanta, but all empty. Guru more murkh dekhi. He said, my guru said you are a fool. What will you do with Vedanta? Like, do you mean somebody is scratching his head, that means he's thinking? No. Thinking is a set of skills. A monkey may scratch his hair till all the hairs come out. That doesn't mean he's thinking. Or somebody like this in a pensive mood. That doesn't mean he's thinking. But we sort of satisfy ourselves. Let me think. What are your tools? None. How can you think? So Vedanta Sutra requires a specific set of tools. And Mahaprabhu is telling the biggest thinker of that particular time, my sir, you are like that. You say you are a sannyasi and you have no interest in the end of the end point of why you have taken sannyas. What is the goal of spirituality? Actually, you are a fool. Murkha tumi tumar nahik Vedanta adhikar Krishna mantra japasada ei mantra sar. My guru said you are a fool. You have no Vedanta adhikar. Actually, how true it is. I went to Chembur for a small program. Before that class, the week before, a big mission had a session, 3-4 sessions on Vedanta. And one person came because he actually told me, I was not very happy coming here because last week, 3 days of Vedanta, he said, I've got a headache. And my friend who was the organizer, he convinced me to buy 1,500 rupees worth of books. So I took one book, I lost my sleep. The subject matter was so tough. So he said, and there was a Prabhupada book table there. So he said, what you spoke was fairly simple, I could give you that. But now they are telling me, buy those books. So you are like, come on, those books are giving me a headache. I purchased them and they are giving me a headache. So I said, okay, you take one, read it right now here, sit on this bench. See if you can understand, see if it's intelligible, and then take. So he said, this actually doesn't give me headache. So just see, this age, we are not meant for, we don't have any adhikar, and just out of stubbornness, people say, no, you have to. It's just like telling people, come here for a bamboo juice session. Bamboo? There is no juice in bamboo. How can you say that? You may have a machine, you have a set of bamboos, but you pull them through, what comes out? Dust, sawdust or whatever. For juice, there is Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's what our job is. We need to relish it, we need to share. Krishna mantra haite habe sansar mochan, Krishna naam haite pabe Krishna racharan. My guru is telling me, samsara means this ocean of birth and death. In order to get relief from that, this Krishna naam is enough. Nama bina kalikale nahi ar dharma, sarva mantra sara naam e shastra marma. Believe me, says my guru is telling me, this mantra is the sar, is the essence of all religion. Eta boli ek shlok shikhaila more, kante kari ay shlok kari ho vichare. Then he said, take this one verse. Kanthe kari, keep it in your throat. And that shloka is, Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Hare Nam eva kevalam, kalo nastyaiva, nastyaiva, nastyaiva katiranyatha. 3 times. Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Hare Nam, eva kevalam, kalo nastyaiva. First nastyaiva is karma, out. Second nastyaiva, jnana, out. Third nastyeva, yoga, out. So the path of karma, jnana and mystic yoga, 3 times it is said, out. And it is said, Hare Naam eva. Eya agya paya, naam laya anukhan, naam laite laite mora bhranta hoila man. He said, I took this guru's order, I had to chant, my mind got devastated. Dhairya dharite nari, haila munmatta, Hasi kandi nachi gai jai che madamatta. And he says, I don't have any sobriety. This name makes me laugh, makes me cry, makes me dance. I am like a maddened person. Tabe dhairya dhari mane karilum vichar, Krishna name jnanachanna hailo amar. Then I thought for a moment, Mahaprabhu is telling Prakashananda Saraswati, I chanted and this Krishna name has entered my mindset and has covered all my previous knowledge. The old software doesn't work anymore. Krishna has completely taken control. Pagal hoila ami dhairya nai mane Ette chinti nivedilu guru racharane. I think I'm going mad. So I went to my guru and said, I do ask you a question. What's happening to me?
Kiba mantra dila gosai, kiba tara bol, japite japite mantra korilo pagal.
He said, I told my guru, hey, what did you do to me? What was that mantra you gave? I'm going mad. Stark mad, raving mad.
Hasai nachai more karaya krandan, ettashuni guru hasi balila vachan.
And my guru Maharaj smiled. And I was so happy that he smiled. He said, Krishna naam maha mantre eita sobhav, jai jape tar krishna upajaye bhav.
He said, this is the nature of Krishna mantra.
Krishna is the happiest person on earth. No, ever. Not on this earth. So, what happens when you come in touch with him? Like what happens when you come in touch with the sun? You catch fire. So, happiness is not a pie in the sky. Happiness is not something which we, is like beyond the horizon. Krishna, when he enters into the mindset and he captures the senses, happiness is like Prabhupada once described, insignificant byproduct. There are devotees who were cursing their ecstasies. They were so close to Krishna and they are fanning him and they are feeling so happy and they say, curse my happiness, it's stopping my service. So that happiness which we all feel is like, oh, so wonderful, is available so easily. And Mahaprabhu then did something wonderful. He expanded his brilliance. Now these personalities were all talking of Brahman, 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 Tej, Tej, Tej. They saw his Tej and they say he is the source of that. They all became Mahaprabhu's disciples. We come to the final two. I know I am out of time. I'll just take 10 more minutes. Please bear with me. The second, the next talk, which is described in Tejana of Lord Chaitanya, is with Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya. The background is, as I told you, he is a Raj Purohit. In fact, he trained sannyasis. He is that renowned as a scholar. And Mahaprabhu knows, this is a big fish. You require a very sophisticated netting for it. So what greater way of delivering Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya than by going as a student. So, Mahaprabhu is a young sannyasi and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya says, Krishna Chaitanya. He didn't take his guru's sannyas name. He retained the brahmachari name, Chaitanya. So, he said, your sannyas has to go on for your life, isn't it? He said, I think I made a mistake in taking sannyas so early. And overflowing with paternal love, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya says, oh, poor guy, you know, he took sannyas in a fit of some madness or whatever. I'll help you. I'll help you with that. He says, would you like to get some coaching from me? Mahaprabhu said, yes. So 7 days, morning till night, dawn till dusk, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya would give explanations of various points of Vedanta Sutra. And Mahaprabhu would be like this. So after 7 days, like sometimes the teacher explains a problem and says, any questions? And he says, no questions. Why? I don't understand anything. For me to have a question, there has to be some understanding. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya stops his discourse, Krishna Katha. Speak Krishna Katha. First time Mahaprabhu's face lights up and says, this is something. Ramananda is satisfied. Go ahead. He says, ahead? Ahead means, like we saw the five rasas, again these five rasas are delineated with a different gloss on it. In Shanta, the deer, the animals, the peacocks, the birds, the trees, the stones of Vrindavan. Like we see our wonderful backdrop here. Everything behind, which is inanimate, the gate and all of that comes in the category of shantaras. Don't think they are dead people or there is inert matter. There is nothing inert in this spiritual world. Everything is chinmay. The clouds, water, everything is chinmay. So he says, next. So he says there is dasyaras, active service. Next, sakya, friendship. Next, vatsalya, parenthood. Next, madhurya. And he says the gopis, their way of loving Krishna. Loving Krishna because he is Krishna. Full stop. No other questions. Like the boys would come at home and they would tell their parents, Krishna did this today. Yeah, Krishna can do anything. Prabhupada says, this is the epitome of that understanding. Krishna, our Krishna can do anything. After the gopis thing has ended, Mahaprabhu says, can you go higher? Ramananda says, in the history of spiritual evolution, that means evolution of spiritual thought, nobody asks this question. But I am like a Veena and you are the Veena Vadan. You are the Veena Vadak. You are the one who is playing his Veena. I'll speak now. Just because you are telling me, I'm going to speak. And then he talks of Radharani, her qualities. Radharani has 25 qualities. Krishna has 64. But with 25, she controls him. Why? Because Krishna agrees to be controlled by her love. Radha is Krishna and Krishna is Radha. They are not different. Krishna doesn't seek out female companionship through some other sources. He has his own female nature, his own mirror in that sense, the storehouse of all compassion as Srimati Radharani. And then Ramananda Rai goes much, much, much deeper into some terms which Prabhupada says there is no English equivalent. Prema Vaichitya, Kutta Mitta and all that, Prabhupada says, I have to put it like as it is. But just because of these five conversations, we have the whole of Gaura Tattva in front of us. So I would like to stop here. Thank you very much for being such a patient audience. As I said, this was for my own benefit. I again pray that whatever I said, let me assimilate in my own life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Hare Krishna, there is